This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio and KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Valensky.
And Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And I guess there's no summer tonight. And
no Jennifer.
And no Jennifer.
Jennifer is actually at a meeting with working on Texas films. The fact that the Texas Film Commission isn't quite pushing Houston like they should. So she called me earlier, and I says, absolutely, that's real important to do. And we will miss Summer, because Summer does our social media during the show, and that's become a very important part of the show.
She's feeling under the weather, so...
But that's fine. We will move on. Tonight we're going to be... Oh, no, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, on the show tonight, it's J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage. This month his show is titled Queer Nation, The Music and the Politics Then and Now. Tonight is part one, which includes interviews with members of the band Queer Conscience, which was very much inspired by the politics of Queer Nation, Ray Hill, and the very political and talented artist Scott Free. That's tonight. Tonight, in our second hour. In the first hour, Megan Stabler and Eric Stanks will be here to discuss the past, present, and future of Pride Houston. Pride Houston is the organization that puts on the big festival and the nighttime parade each year at the end of June, followed by News Wrap, which reports tonight on the Episcopal Church having approved the Reverend Mary Glasspool as its first openly lesbian bishop, while Britain's House of Lords has approved religious ceremonies for same-gender civil partnerships. And Civil Disobedience and Bizarre Testimony headline the first U.S. Senate committee hearings on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's followed by This Way Out's feature segments reporting more in-depth on the Don't Ask, Don't Tell Senate hearings and a prize-winning CNN report about an Arkansas student who refuses to say the Pledge of Allegiance at his school until lesbians and gays achieve full equality. All that tonight on Queer Voices.
Well, you know, we had a meeting with the general manager last week, and one of the things I told him was that we don't usually talk about ourselves because we have guests here and we talk about what they're doing, what they're involved in. But we're going to break the rule a little bit today to talk about J.D. since he's not here. So let's talk about him.
Well, yes, we are very proud to announce that one of our own has won an award. It is the Stonewall Society Pride in the Arts Annual Awards, and J.D. Doyle has won the Lifetime Achievement in Music for 2009 for Queer Music Heritage.
And we're real proud of him, and we're real happy that he's part of our show, and you will hear why in the second hour if you haven't heard the show before, because he does this incredible hour's worth of history of queer music. And as I've been saying, J.D. probably has the largest collection of queer music in the world, and he has done a lot of research and talking people to people about the history, about why they do it, where they did it. He has some stuff that probably nobody else has.
Absolutely. He's like, a musical encyclopedia of queer
and
music.
And this is not the first award that J.D. has won.
I know. He's the,
the award agglomerator.
Right. This is the award-winning show, but they're all J.D.'s awards, which is fine.
Which still qualifies as award-winning, right?
Well, it does, yes. And we're happy to be able to be here doing the show all the time. And J.D. gets all the awards, and that's great. That's great.
And we will credit
well
him.
Well-deserved. Well
absolutely,
deserved.
Absolutely.
So, speaking of stuff going on in the community, this past week was the Senate District Conventions, and I hope some people went to them because they were a little bit tough to sit through, but they were interesting. A lot of resolutions went through. I'm guessing that Equality Texas had a number of resolutions that I believe were probably passed through that will go on to the state Democratic Party. I kind of doubt any of them went through the Republican side of the
party.
No, I'm not sure there was probably some tries of that going through, and that's great. I give everybody the, worth the effort to trying to do that, and they'll be brought up at the state convention, which will be in Corpus Christi, and I think it's Pride Weekend, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm.
So that happens.
And what about this whole healthcare reform thing?
That's interesting. All our problems are solved. So maybe Pacific can go home and don't have to do any more programs. So, it's a start.
It's a start.
And I give credit for all the work that has been done to get it there. Certainly, we all wish it was a better plan. We wish it was an all-encompassing plan, but it's a start, and we have to give everybody credit who worked hard on it. There were no Republicans that voted for it, and there were some Democrats that voted against it, but there were enough Democrats that voted for it, and like I said, it's a start. You probably heard a number of programs here on KPFT talking about it during the day. And then there's the Pope. And we'll probably get in that to a little bit later. That'll probably be
We're going to have him on, what, in a couple
weeks?
Yeah,
right. He's going to come on and spill the beans about everything that went on. But let's get the show going. Next week, we're going to be doing stuff about Easter, because that's coming up next week.
Easter.
That's a big gay holiday.
That's a big gay holiday / fundraising for Houston. So we're going to have a special next week on that.
So we'll be right back. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Get up here next to you. Do you think you could help me find my shoes? I must be a sight. I can't look my best here in this bright, bright morning light. It ain't right.
From the album Ear to the Ground, that was Coyote Grace and the name of the song, Young and Dumb. This is Queer Voices.
Well, spring has sprung, and that means that Pride is not that far down around the corner. And so we thought it'd be good to talk to our Pride people. Pride is one of the largest organizations within the community. It is probably the largest Pride, probably the largest GLBT event within the state, probably within the region, that happens every year, the last full weekend of June. And so we thought we'd get a little bit better understanding of what's going on. Why don't you all introduce yourselves and what roles you play in Pride?
Hi, Jack. I'm Megan Thaler. I'm the president of Pride Houston.
I'm Eric Skanes, executive director of Pride Houston.
Okay, so we have a Pride and Festival. So tell us about, what the plans are, what's a little bit different, how is it getting the community engaged? Because, I know that's a tough thing these days.
Sure. Nothing's changed. We have a Pride Festival and we have a Pride Parade, right? And
is it the same weekend as it always has been?
26th of June.
Okay.
So it's that last weekend in June, and, it's either going to rain or hopefully it's going to sunshine. And if it sunshines, it's going to be hot.
It pretty much always rains in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Well, the last three years, it comes out. God loves the gay, so it always doesn't rain on the parade.
It doesn't rain on the parade, absolutely. So we can start singing the songs. So, it's the same format, but, we've had to look at various things such as how can we try and be more family-friendly at the same time as accommodating for every part of the community, right? And how can we sort of accommodate the fact that it is hot and you have that festival that people want to go to at the same time as they want to be able to hang around and actually enjoy the parade as well. So we try to make some little slight adjustments as far as the timing of the festival, sort of moving it later. And we also want to accommodate for the vendors. I mean, the other key thing, obviously, about the festival is the vendors that come out either to promote their own social causes or needs or groups, or to go ahead and promote to buy various things as well. So we've got to accommodate for those and for the people coming, and there's a whole food chain, and it's from a vendor perspective, it's very cheap to go ahead and get the booth and promote yourself and do those things, especially as you said, it is really the largest event in the state of Texas, and then probably go as far as saying the largest evening event in North America when it comes to, a gay pride event at the end of the day. So there's a lot of things to consider, as well as reaching out to different aspects of the community, which is in itself very difficult.
Right? And it seems to be getting tougher and tougher now. Mm-hmm. Now that we've seemed to gain more acceptance and people are more comfortable, they don't feel like they have to come to the Montrose, go to the bars. And, that's a challenge.
It's a challenge
for all the organizations.
And it's a challenge for the organization, but I don't think that means that we shouldn't be coming together as a community to celebrate who we are and where we've come from. Certainly from the, and you guys know how involved politically I am nationally. I mean, we haven't reached that level in my mind of having any of the number of promises that our fierce advocate told us. A year ago, we got hate crimes thankfully through, and we got some of the legislation that's going to come through, but I do think we need to come together as a community. We still need to be seen. This is not as good as Houston is, as great as Houston is, thankfully, with Anise Parker now as mayor, and, Bill White was a great mayor before as well. It still can be a dangerous place.
Well, and I think that's true. And a lot of the younger generations pulling for marriage, yet we don't even have the basic rights in the city or states.
Exactly. And so there's the rights perspective. There is the protections. And I don't just mean workplace protections. I'm also talking about, the fact, we did have transgender murder. I mean, Myra Ekal, right? Just a couple of months ago.
Not even that, I think.
6 or 7 weeks ago. So there are still those issues. I mean, even if you go up to Austin, where, you could count that Austin is probably the more liberal city in the state of Texas.
It's liberal, and it's kind of, it could be redneck, too.
It could be redneck.
Kind of small-minded.
I have residences in both Austin as well as Houston. But we did have two gay men that walked out of, I think it was OCH, Volcan Harry's, at night and, got the snot beaten out of them. So as much as we can say that, we pretty much go back and go on with our lives, we do need to come together and celebrate who we are as far as a diverse community for LGBTQIA, and also a diverse community as far as our own needs, whether they're social or personal, as well as the diversity within the community, whether it's people of color, whether it's Hispanic, Latino, you know, whatever it may be. We need to pull that together.
And that's definitely a concern within Houston, and it's not mm-hmm. just Pride's responsibility. It's all our responsibilities.
Right.
But Pride is the biggest showcase of the community, mm-hmm. and to outreach to the minorities within the community is really tough. And how do you address that? I mean, I don't have the magic answers.
Well, you know, there is no magic answer. You know, the answer is through networking and through trying to showcase that, you know, and I guess I'm not trying to say that we are the organization for Houston, because as you know, there are so many, you know, the Gay Men's Chorus is sort of one end, and you've got Leathers at the other end, and, you know, myself, even though I am transsexual, I'll probably class myself more as a lesbian now, and so we've got the lesbian community too, and then even in the lesbian community, you've got the sort of the ethnic minorities. So it's a matter of networking, it's a matter of getting the messages out and showing that we really don't want to reach. So, you know, if, you know, even on the show, if there's people that want to participate, whether it's on the parade itself and, you know, come join us in that, you know, there is nothing better than having, you know, Houston's, what, 2-hour parade plus at night? It's been as long as 3 hours, I think, in the past.
One year it stretched past the second day.
Well, yeah.
It's the only parade in Houston's history that went 2 days.
I know, but, you know, and think about the logistics that have to go into that. So,
it's,
you know,
a major undertaking.
Yeah, and so it's not just a matter of, you know, come get a float and come showcase yourself, but we want those volunteers as well. We want to make sure that people...
So do we know if the mayor's going to be in the parade this year?
Well, we're working on that right now, absolutely.
That's a very tough question.
Yeah, you know, she is getting so many asks, so...
Of course,
right.
Yes.
We, you know, I don't know if we're sort of preempting ourselves, but we definitely want her in the parade and doing our asks.
Now, have you announced your theme? I haven't...
Pride, not prejudice.
Yeah.
Pride, not prejudice.
Pride, not prejudice. And it was, you know, we put it up for vote out there as well. We had a number of different themes that... had been submitted, and we put it out there for a community vote, and Pride Not Prejudice came up, and I think there's a lot of plays in that, whether or not you think back to the Bronte sisters in the books, or you think to, you know, it is about pride, and it's not about prejudice.
And it really worked out well with Denise Parker becoming a mayor. You know, mm-hmm. the city of Houston, of all cities in America, can say that we are proud of who our elected officials are for the work that they do, and that we're not going to hold any type of prejudice against them.
Right.
And, I mean, it seemed... perfect, given the timing of her election and going into 2010, it just seemed ideal.
So if we have listeners out there that are inspired by Anissa's victory and they want to volunteer and get involved in the community and get involved with Pride, who do they contact? How do they get a hold of Pride?
PrideHouston.org is the best way to go.
Just go to the website.
Mm-hmm. Fill in the information. And
We've revamped our website quite a bit. There's going to be... spots on the website where people can actually go and they see all the different volunteer opportunities. So they're not just filling out a blank application, not sharing what they're going to be doing. There's actually going to be a role for each spot that we have within the organization, the need, as well as the responsibilities. And if they have interest in it, they just click on it and say, I'm interested in it, and someone's going to respond pretty quickly.
Now, what is the deadline for floats and organizations to be in the parade? Is that coming up?
There's a deadline coming up at the end of this month.
Okay.
And there's also the deadline at the end of May.
Okay.
And we've taken applicants, you know, the day before, most likely, but it's, you know...
Spot placement.
Yeah, spot placement is key.
It's all about getting a
people
location,
are calling us,
location,
right?
Location.
People are calling us right now saying, hey, I want to be in the front of the parade. And I said, well, you should have applied in January. That would have been ideal, but...
Yeah.
There's plenty of spots open right now in the middle of the pack, so we're good to go.
Absolutely.
And I understand that the Grand Marshal voting is going on at this point.
Exactly.
Online, yep.
Yep.
A lot of fantastic people are up
through
for
April 8th?
April 7th.
April 7th.
Is the deadline for...
And then the announcement is
April 8th.
April 8th.
Yep.
And have y'all released that information, or is it...
It's at Momentum Audi.
Okay.
And it will be the Momentum Audi at Kirby in Richmond,
Kirby.
Starting at 7 p.m.
So do go ahead and get your votes in. I mean, there's quick drop-down menus. You can see who the people are, and there are some fantastic people on that list. So,
and we have, and for a while, you know, Jack, we've talked about this before. With you know, this year we're introducing Celebrity Grand Marshal, and we've had...
don't tell.
Oh,
well, we've already announced who it is. It's Andy Cohen from Bravo TV. If anyone watches
Housewives. I keep saying Desperate Housewives, and I think some of them are, but it's actually the Real Housewives show.
Real Housewives, and
he does the
live call-in after show. Yeah. He's a senior executive over there as well, so he does a number of different things. But Andy is a very out, proud man, and you know, we were just excited that he would really come into Houston and sort of lend his celeb status to us as well.
We're becoming a gay destination. We're becoming, you know, a place of note in the gay, I guess, universe.
And that's from the Convention Business Bureau as well.
I mean, people are still going, Houston?
Exactly.
So, you know, and I noticed during the parade, it's kind of a tourist draw within Texas. You see kind of the smaller towns that come here to the big city to see, you know, the big pride parade. So, you know, that pulls in a lot of people.
Well, it does. I mean, you think we have, you know, depending on whose numbers you go with HPD, you know, you've probably got a couple hundred thousand people, 150 plus thousand people that are coming to this. And so they're not just coming from inside of Houston. And you know, that in itself does cause a logistical security issue, right? So we do have to make sure that we control it. We don't want, you know, drunken brawls happening on the streets and stuff. That's, you know, one of the concerns we've always had is, you know, to be respected, we have to be respectful of those things. So I think as a community, you know, we may want to lash out when we're not getting progress on our legislative agenda, or we're not, you know, you're listening to those people against us, like AFA or, you know, some of the Focus on the Family stuff. But by us lashing back, it's echoing and reverberating their hate. So yeah, we need to be respectful of everything that goes on, and for our own community, within the community, within the parade itself, you know, we need to show some respect for each other. You know, we're a speck on this earth. We're not here for infinity. And if we can leave a footprint, and a good footprint as far as humanity goes, that for me is what pride is about, putting it all together.
Absolutely. What anniversary are we on now? Are we like a
32nd year.
Yeah, it depends who you're talking to. You go talk to Ray Hill,
yeah,
it goes back to
Ray
75,
Hill. Yeah,
you know.
Back to 75, we were just speaking out front.
Well, Ray Hill started Pride himself.
Yeah.
He was
78 was actually the first Pride. 79 was the first parade. There wasn't a parade. And there's actually a 1980 Pride Guide that is, you know, and then there wasn't any one done until 1987, and then continuously, although I'm not sure if they all exist.
Yeah, but I think, even then, it's remarkable. I mean, this was Houston, 69, obviously, with the Stonewall Riots.
Right. And well, I was going to ask you, why in the heck do we have Pride in June in Houston?
Well, June is the respected month as far as the Stonewall Riots go,
right,
you know, 1969. So, you know, we have, you know, I'll be honest, we have played with, do we move it? There are some other parades that take place in different months. I think Atlantis is in the
Halloween,
November time.
Yeah, well, Atlanta was on the traditional holiday weekend for years until they had the drought and they basically went bust that year.
Right.
Because it's
in
that
Houston,
park, right?
In Houston as well, I believe that the year Anita Bryant came to Houston, that was in June.
Roughly
when
June,
we
exactly.
When they was the first.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know.
I think it was the first protest downtown.
75, 76.
And
how did she know that
Lawrence versus Texas obviously happened on June 3rd? I want to say first part of June. And 2003,
June has a lot.
Plus, my daughter's birthday's in June, so there we go. That's
we just get hot in June.
But you know, the reality, the best known holiday was the Supreme Court knocking down the sodomy law,
Lawrence v. Texas,
which was the last week in June. I mean, it happened. I mean, they couldn't played it better for Pride to get some national recognition was to do it the Monday before the Saturday parade.
Totally.
And then there was the raid in Fort Worth that happened.
Last year.
There's like an alignment of the gay stars.
We have to be careful anyway what's going to happen this June. Let's hope it's good stuff. But, you know, we have toyed. You know, get back to the seriousness of this thing. You know, you have the heat. You know, we're very conscious about, you know, making sure people are hydrating properly and doing all those things. So we have toyed with moving the dates. But if you think about the parade, the largest parade probably that the city of Houston sees annually.
Second largest.
To think about moving that to a different month, or even, you know, potentially moving the location to, you know, do you want to move it downtown, you know, to Discovery Green and you know, have a bigger outside park and things. It's a huge logistical nightmare. And, you know, there are definitely some people in the community that say, you know, let's move it. But I'll tell you, Montrose is the historical park for us. There's nothing like Montrose. And for somebody like me that does travel a lot, and again has sort of two residences from where we live. And you know, my partner and I are down here in Houston because she has a job down here, and I can just really work from home wherever. There is nothing better than being in Montrose and putting also your money. Right, you know, we look at the restaurants that are in there too, so we're very conscious about it. So I think we're in the right place.
Well, they tried to move it a couple of years ago downtown, and there was this huge uproar from the community. There was meetings, you know, this is history. Our blood is on the streets. Yeah. You know, Montrose is our history.
Well, and let's be honest, they also didn't do the right job in trying to say what the advantages were.
Mm-hmm.
And this is before you two were pretty much involved. And the reality was is that they talked about the committee could make more money, which is not something that the community really cares about, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the community doesn't. I mean, we're a not-for-profit, but, we, you know, we do
have to survive.
We have to survive.
And you have to pay your bills.
And that is a tough thing. I mean, I'm very proud of the board that we have right now and the way that things are coming together for this June. But at the end of the day, this is something that we need to cover our expenses and have a buffer in there as well.
I mean,
for the
there's always going to be a down year. I mean, look at Atlanta.
Exactly. But, you know, I think we're coming out of a couple of years where it has been down and gradually on the rise again. So,
but at least for right now, we know we're comfortable in June. You know, luckily there's not a lot going on in June. So
that's,
you know,
the other advantage. Absolutely.
So we are at focal point. Conventions Bureau for the Visitor Center labeled Pride Houston this year as, you know, one of the top 10 events to attend in Houston in 2010. So,
wow.
So that's a major accomplishment. The city's recognizing us for the impact that we have, not only locally, but what we bring to the city on a national level, even globally. And this year, I think we're really going to see it with the first celebration after Anissa's victory.
So let's sort of put this all together. What are some of the major events heading up to June?
Well, we're starting it off with our kickoff party on August. I'm sorry, on April the 8th. It's going to be held at Momentum Audi. In May, we'll be bringing back again the Houston Pride Idol, which is in a new location this year. We'll be at Meteor Houston. Follow that. Well, you know, I mean, that leads us right up until the celebration on June the 26th.
And what are the? Do you have the time set for the festival?
Yeah, it starts at 1 p.m.
As opposed to when did it used to?
11 a.m. last year. Okay. So we're just telling you, just get there at 1. And when people leave, that's when it's over.
Yeah, and so. and I do want to encourage people to go to the festival. I know, you know, that makes a long day. You know, you're going from 1 through maybe 11, 11:30 at night, and 12, whatever it may be.
And Houston heat is beating down on you. And you're building your float and, you know, just all...
There's a lot of retailers to visit.
But there's a lot of retailers to visit. And
Radio Shack. Yeah. And, I mean, go to the mall. I mean, just hit them up and get involved in the celebration.
But from the community folks that are going to be there as well, the festival itself, you know, it is a learning experience. So it is a chance to go and understand how diverse we are and how, you know, accommodating everybody is.
And you have open meetings.
Yes, all of our meetings are open. We publicize them on our website. Our calendar should be on there and up and running. We're revamping our website. It's going to be more mobile friendly so we can finally get up to the 21st century. And it's there's a Google Calendar. If it's not on our website, which it should, I'm almost positive it is, you can find it in Google Calendars.
Okay. Well, so the date is?
June the 26th.
Okay, starting at 1 p.m. And going to close to midnight.
Yeah, we're hopefully before that.
Well, we're going to, the festival itself is going to run until, 8 or 9, I think it is? Don't have the vendors to...
Runs until 8 p.m.
8 p.m., and then obviously the
food
festival.
Food stays open until the start of the parade.
Yeah.
Which is 8:45, right?
Okay, Megan and Eric, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
More information, you can go to pridehouston.org, and their offices are located in the Gay and Lesbian GLBT Resource Center, which is part of Montrose Counseling Center. Pridehouston.org. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you.
I'm Taryn James.
And I'm Michelle Pleasant.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 20th, 2010. The Episcopal Church this week approved the election as Bishop of the Reverend Mary Glasspool of Baltimore in the Diocese of Los Angeles. Her ordination will make her the first openly lesbian bishop in the Global Anglican Communion, a 77 million member worldwide fellowship of Christian churches rooted in the Church of England. The Episcopal Church is its U.S. branch. The Los Angeles Diocese elected her in December. The national body's approval of Glasspool underscored a continued Episcopal commitment to full participation by gays and lesbians, despite often angry criticism from other Anglican regions, primarily in Africa, Latin America, and Asia. The Episcopal Church caused an uproar in 2003 by consecrating the communion's first openly gay bishop, V. Gene Robinson of New Hampshire. Some progressive Canadian, Anglican, and Episcopal churches also celebrate same-gender unions. In 2004, Anglican leaders asked the Episcopal Church for a moratorium on electing another gay bishop while they tried to prevent permanent schism in the fellowship. But the Episcopal General Convention, the U.S. Church's top policymaking body, affirmed in July 2009 that gay and lesbian priests remained eligible to become bishops. The 56-year-old Glasspool has been a canon or advisor for 8 years to the Diocese of Maryland's bishop. She said she met her partner Becky Sander while working in Massachusetts, and the two have been together since 1988. Glasspool's consecration has been scheduled for May 15th.
Britain's House of Lords voted 95-21 earlier this month to allow religious authorities to conduct same-gender civil partnership ceremonies in churches and other places of worship. The change is not supported by the government, but is expected to pass the House of Commons as well. Lesbian and gay civil partnerships were legalized in 2005 and offer virtually the same rights and obligations as marriage, except the name. Veteran activist Peter Tatchell said that he expected civil partnerships to be celebrated by gay affirmative religions, including the Unitarians and Quakers, and some Anglican churches and liberal synagogues.
The European Court of Human Rights has ruled unanimously that Poland discriminated against a gay man by refusing to let him continue renting his and his partner's apartment after the partner's death. Polish courts had ruled that tenancy rights for cohabiting partners only applied to heterosexual couples because the nation's constitution says marriage is a union of a man and a woman. The Eurocourt said Poland violated articles of the European Convention on Human Rights that prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation and protect the right to respect for private and family life. It took the often notoriously slow Eurocourt more than 8 years to issue its ruling.
A queer magazine has launched in Belarus, even though the government refused to allow it to be registered. Gay, Good As You, will publish 6 times a year in Belarusian and Russian. The first edition was distributed March 1st in Minsk. It's also online at gaybelarus.by. Chief Editor Sergei Prodid noted that the authorities have denied to register our magazine, making it unofficial and preventing us to print more than 299 copies, according to the law. But he added that we hope to be able to circulate a few in other cities by April.
In Taiwan, more than 100 LGBT people and their supporters protested at City Hall in the capital of Taipei on March 2nd. The China Post reported, after the Ministry of Education sent a memo to high schools advising them to ban homosexual activities. The federal agency issued the memo after a Taipei City Council committee discussed, but did not pass, a resolution suggesting that the municipal government investigate how to prevent high school student groups from leading students into homosexual activities. Ministry of Education Secretary General Tsang Sun-chin responded to the protest with an official apology.
Chile's leading queer rights group, Movimiento de Integración y Liberación Homosexual, or Homosexual Integration and Liberation Movement, has released preliminary findings on earthquake damage to the LGBT community infrastructure. The Frida Kahlo Lesbian Cultural Center in Chillán was destroyed in the February 8.8 magnitude quake, the report said, and the headquarters of the Chilean AIDS Prevention Corporation and the group Acción Gay in Valparaíso was severely damaged. The homes of many Chilean LGBT activists are also in poor condition, the report said, while other activists who fight against homophobia and transphobia in Chile are still missing. For more information online, go to movilh.cl.
In the U.S., the lesbian and gay couples who sued the state of New Jersey for the right to marry in 2002 are taking their case back to court. Six couples plus the surviving partner from a seventh filed a motion this week charging that the state continues to discriminate against them, even though it offers civil unions to same-gender couples. The original lawsuit resulted in a 2006 New Jersey Supreme Court decision ordering lawmakers to enact legislation giving gay and lesbian couples full marriage rights, though it did not require that they be called marriage. The New Jersey legislature passed a civil unions law, but even its committees have heard compelling testimony that civil unions are not being treated as equal to marriage by many private and public institutions in the state. A marriage equality bill failed in the New Jersey Senate earlier this year.
Pennsylvania lawmakers killed a bill this week that could have constitutionally banned same-gender marriage. The State Senate Judiciary Committee rejected the measure in an 8-6 bipartisan vote. According to the American Civil Liberties Union of Pennsylvania, the bill, sponsored by anti-gay Republican Senator John Eichelberger, is unlikely to be reconsidered before the end of the 2010 legislative session.
And finally, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was in the headlines again this week for more reasons than one. A Senate committee heard sometimes heartfelt and sometimes bizarre testimony on the proposed repeal of the U.S. military policy banning service by open gays and lesbians. And there was controversy over a Don't Ask, Don't Tell related civil disobedience action outside the White House. A carefully orchestrated rally against Don't Ask, Don't Tell, organized by the Human Rights Campaign on the day of the Senate hearings, was criticized by grassroots activists as little more than a photo op for one of the speakers, pro-queer comedian Kathy Griffin. Her appearance was widely promoted by the HRC several days prior to the demonstration. The crew from her cable TV program, My Life on the D-List, was there to capture video for the show. Gay Iraq War veteran Lieutenant Dan Choi, whose discharge is pending because he came out on national television, and already discharged former Army infantryman Captain Jim Petrangelo, then led a march to the White House to continue protesting the failure of the President and Congress to move more swiftly on the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The two men chained themselves to a White House fence in an act of civil disobedience and were arrested soon thereafter for refusing to leave. They were charged with failure to obey a lawful order by a police officer. According to two reputable bloggers, they spent the night in jail and were led into court the next day in handcuffs and leg irons. Rather than pay the typical $100 fine, each pleaded not guilty. Choi told the judge, "I'm not ashamed, I'm not finished, not guilty." Each man was released, and a somewhat surprised judge set trial dates for late April.
The Senate Armed Services Committee hearings themselves were the first in that body since Don't Ask, Don't Tell was enacted in 1993. They followed similar hearings that were held in the House last month. Former Air Force Major Mike Almy and former U.S. Navy Lieutenant Junior Grade Jenny Kaufstein, who each served in Iraq and Afghanistan, testified about the impact on their lives of being involuntarily discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But the headline-making testimony came from retired U.S. Marine Corps General John Sheehan, who opposes service by open lesbians and gays. He left the military 13 years ago after a 35-year career, serving under Don't Ask, Don't Tell for about 3 years. Questions by Committee Chair Carl Levin of Michigan seemed to confirm the retired general's belief that lesbian and gay service members were not entitled to equal treatment.
He said that no special accommodation should be made for any member of the military.
Sure.
Are members who are straight, who are heterosexual, allowed in our military to say that they are straight and heterosexual? Are they allowed to say that without being discharged?
Are they allowed to declare the sexuality?
Yeah, are they allowed to say that, hey, I'm straight, I'm heterosexual? Can you say that without being discharged?
There's no prohibition to my knowledge.
Is that special accommodation to them?
I wouldn't consider a special accommodation.
Why do you believe that's a special accommodation to somebody who is gay?
We're talking about a group of people who declared openly sexual attraction to a particular segment of the population and insist on continuing to live in the intimate proximity with them.
But
that, by law,
you allow that for heterosexuals.
Yes.
You don't have any problem with that.
Don't have a problem with that.
You don't have any problem with men and women serving together even though they say that they're attracted to each other.
That's correct.
That's not a special accommodation.
No.
But Sheehan's assertion that the Dutch military was weakened by its openly gay and lesbian personnel caused an uproar overseas. We'll have more about that in a few moments, so do stay tuned.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 20th, 2010. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Michelle Pleasant.
And I'm Taryn James.
We'll hear about a cinematic single man and a patriotic single boy later in the program. Openly lesbian news commentator Rachel Maddow reported on some rather bizarre testimony at the March 18th U.S. Senate Armed Services Committee hearings about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the U.S. military policy that forces gay and lesbian service members to stay closeted during her self-titled MSNBC cable program that night, with, as it turned out, a necessary follow-up the next night. Here are a few excerpts.
Opponents of repealing the policy today introduced a former Marine general to testify in favor of keeping the policy. His name is General John Sheehan. He's a retired Marine general. He's former Supreme Allied Commander of the Atlantic for NATO. General Sheehan's argument against Don't Ask, Don't Tell was essentially today that the liberalization of the military would weaken the military. He, in fact, made a very specific argument about that today, and that argument did not sit very well with committee chairman Carl Levin. It led to this pretty remarkable exchange.
The case in point that I'm referring to is when the Dutch were required to defend Srebrenica against the Serbs. The battalion was under strength, wholly led, and the Serbs came into town, handcuffed the soldiers to the telephone poles, marched the Muslims off, and executed them. That was the largest massacre in Europe since World War II.
And did the Dutch leaders tell you it was because there were gay soldiers there?
It was a combination.
But did they tell you that? That's my question.
They did. They included that as part of the problem.
That there were gay soldiers among the Dutch.
The combination was the liberalization of the military, a net effect of basically social engineering.
Pressed to name these people, he said, were Dutch leaders who supposedly told him that Srebrenica happened because the Dutch had gay soldiers. General Sheehan said that he based his allegation on something he was told by a man named Hankman Berman. That's what he said. Hankman Berman told me it was the gays. The Dutch say they've never heard of anyone named Hankman Berman. But they do say there is a former chief of staff in the Dutch Defense Ministry whose name is General Henk van den Bremen. So maybe that's who General Sheehan meant? Turns out it couldn't have been him either. General van den Bremen says what General Jack Sheehan says about gay soldiers is, and I quote, absolute nonsense. Bremen says he never said anything like that to Sheehan, and besides, what Sheehan's claiming about Srebrenica just is not true. In the days since General Sheehan made these comments, in the one day since General Sheehan made these comments, the Dutch have gone nuts about this. The Dutch defense minister said that General Sheehan's comments were, quote, scandalous and unbefitting a soldier. The Dutch defense ministry spokesman said it is astonishing that a man of his stature can utter such complete nonsense. The Dutch foreign minister called Sheehan's comments extremely strange, saying the claim was, quote, the bizarre private opinion of someone without an official function. The head of the Dutch military union said, that man is just crazy. That sounds harsh, but what else can I say, because it's complete nonsense. The Dutch ambassador to our country said, the military mission of Dutch UN soldiers at Srebrenica has been exhaustively studied and evaluated. There is nothing that suggests any relationship between gays serving in the military and that mass murder. Even the Dutch prime minister weighed in on this, calling Sheehan's remarks way off the mark and saying they should never have been made. Let's hope the Dutch are slightly less horrified with Jack Sheehan and with us the next time we go back to them yet again to ask them to serve with our troops in Iraq or Afghanistan or anywhere else.
You can check out the video and audio podcasts of The Rachel Maddow Show at MSNBC.com.
And I'm Maria, and together we're Zrazy. And we're crazy about This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
Will George Falconer's grief drive him to suicide? A day in George's life, as depicted by filmmaker Tom Ford in his adaptation of A Single Man, will answer that question. It also has a lot to say about the life of Christopher Isherwood, who wrote the original story. The movie has recently been released on DVD and continues playing in select theaters. Our entertainment correspondent Steve Fry delved into the film's many layers with Ford and with Oscar-nominated lead actor Colin Firth.
Based on the novel by Christopher Isherwood and set in 1962 Los Angeles, A Single Man depicts a British college professor, played by Colin Firth, who's struggling to find meaning in his life after the death of his longtime partner.
You haven't slept with her, have you?
Yes.
And? A few times when we were younger. I wouldn't say it meant nothing to me, but it certainly meant a great deal more to Charlie. It was a long time ago in London. I love Charlie. And we're very close friends, but that's all.
Well, I'm confused.
I mean, if you sleep with women, then why are you with me?
Because I fall in love with men.
Because I fell in love with you.
This is Tom Ford. Christopher Isherwood was way ahead of his time. One of the things I always loved about his writing was the matter-of-fact way that he treated homosexuality. You know, most of his stories and novels were autobiographical. And so there is usually a gay character, but that's not the center of the story. The gay character is portrayed as a human being who lives a life. And the relationship between George and Jim, I felt it was very important to depict that in a very matter-of-fact way, really two people who are in love with each other. And I wanted this not to be a gay story or a straight story, but to be a human story. And I think that the more that we see that and realize that love between two people is love between two people, the better off we'll all be for that.
As open as George is about his sexuality, in 1962, acceptance was another story.
You only sense it a couple of times, when he's not invited to the funeral because he's not family, and the biggest time really when Julianne, or Charlie, his very best friend who's known him for years, says to him, you know, don't you miss this, what we could have been, having a real relationship and kids. And that, to me, if I were George, would have been the thing that stung the most, that someone so close to you still didn't really understand the relationship that you had with someone else.
Tom, you have a long-term partner.
23 years.
Did that help you to relate to George's loss?
The idea of losing someone that you love could throw you into a situation where you could not see your future and you really would be living in the past, which is what's happening with George. As I understand from Don Bacardi, Christopher's partner, Christopher wrote this story when Don left him for about 8 months, moved to New York with somebody else, and Christopher imagined that Don had died and that he was alone and wrote this story.
Isherwood's partner of 35 years, Don Bacardi, has a tiny cameo and was a consultant on the film.
Oh, it was wonderful, and he contributed a lot because whenever I had a question about something, like, for example, I wrote Julianne's character in a much more glamorous way than she's depicted in the book. And I said, Don, do you think I've gone too far by doing this? He said, the funny thing is, she was based on Iris Tree, who was very stylish, and he pulled out all these pictures of Iris Tree. And he said, you know, Christopher didn't want her to know that she was the inspiration for this part, so he changed her physically, but this was who the real woman was, which of course made me feel better about altering that character to the extent that I did. So it was great to have Don, and it was great to have Don's vote of confidence.
As George Falconer, actor Colin Firth is in a way playing Christopher Isherwood.
I watched a very beautiful film about Chris and Don. I watched it twice. Christopher Isherwood and his partner Don Bacardi. There's a beautiful film called Chris and Don, a love story. I don't know if it helped me. It was of interest to me. I mean, whenever I embark on a project, it's sort of an opportunity to plunge into a particular world, a different perception, just learn maybe about a time or a place that I didn't know as much about. You know, love is love. I don't really feel that there's anything different to play because the partner happens to be male. The person I'll be playing opposite is unlikely to be my lover anyway. So these emotions, you know, you find them from somewhere. It's the job. So I think one of the things that I appreciate greatly about Isherwood's writing is that he doesn't make the sexuality a salient feature. I mean, sexual love is part of it. But he was writing at a time when there were a lot of writers covering that up. I mean, there's no question about it. You know, Terence Rattigan was writing relationships that were clearly about relationships between men, which he had to disguise as relationships between a man and a woman. Isherwood didn't feel the need to do that, but his characters just happen to be gay. I mean, they're not, you know, I don't really define myself by my sexuality either. And I think it's one of the things that George is not struggling with is his sexuality. He's struggling with a lot of things, but he's not struggling with being gay or not. He's fairly happy with who he is in that respect.
But Firth doesn't completely downplay the importance of George's homosexuality.
The sexuality is there because part of the love that he experiences is sexual. I mean, there's sex running all the way through the movie, which I think is strengthened by the fact that we don't need to see anybody humping, you know? No, it's great. I mean, it's we don't need to go into the territory of body functions. So you know, what's interesting about sex is its implications, it's the barriers that are broken down on the way to it. I mean, all these sorts of things are there in the film. The possibilities of it, the ambiguity, the fact that it's forbidden, the fact that I think George's homosexuality in 1960 might add to his isolation. The speech on fear to his students definitely is referencing that. I don't think it's dependent on it. Because the character's not taking this on as an issue, it's not his war with his sexuality or the war against prejudice is not the salient feature of the film. But I think the fact that he is open and comfortably open about the fact that he is gay is definitely significant. I mean, otherwise, why bother to feature it at all? Tom said at a press conference recently that he doesn't define himself by his sexuality particularly. It's there. If you were asked to say 10 things to describe himself, he'd tell you he was from Texas, give you his name, tell you something about his life. Yeah, probably by the time he got to 10, he would have mentioned that he's a gay man. You know, I don't know if I would, in the top 10 things that tell you I was heterosexual, I don't know. It's not irrelevant. As I said before, I think it is about love. And I think it's, you know, it's about regret. It's about gaining or losing your love of life. What I like about it is it's absolutely unashamedly and unassumingly there. I think that if more of a feature were made of it, then it would seem as if it was struggling with something or had something to prove. I think this is homosexuality simply as sexuality like any other sexuality.
What could be better than being tucked up here with you? I mean, if I died right now, it'd be okay.
Well, it wouldn't be okay with me. So why don't you shut up and go and change the record?
Good answer.
Once again, the film's screenwriter and director, Tom Ford.
This movie is really about living in the moment, appreciating the small things in your life that sometimes just go by without you really observing, and understanding your connection to the universe, and understanding that relationships with other people are really the things that matter. And when George decides to take his own life, all of a sudden the beauty of the world starts to pull at him, because he's really looking and seeing for the first time. We have so many eyes in the film because George hasn't been looking people in the eyes. He's been blank. Now all of a sudden he's connecting, and people are responding to him in a different way. He's responding to them. This is a man whose inner world and outer world are connected and has a veneer, but just inside is this romantic guy who's suffering so much, and it's right behind the surface.
This has been a conversation with Tom Ford and Colin Firth. A Single Man also stars Julianne Moore, Nicholas Holt, Matthew Good, and is a Weinstein Company release. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
And finally this week, the CNN Report won the Outstanding TV Journalism Segment Prize, but the young subject of Why Will Won't Pledge Allegiance won the Hearts of GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, at its New York Media Awards banquet on March 13th. Will Phillips is refusing to say the Pledge of Allegiance to the U.S. flag at his Arkansas school until lesbians and gays achieve full equality. He accepted GLAAD's recognition on CNN's behalf.
This is a huge honor. First of all, I would like to thank David Coote of the Arkansas Times, CNN, and especially my family for letting me speak and for letting me be heard. I did this because I wanted to exercise my inherent rights as a citizen. I wanted people to widen their minds and look outside their tiny mind boxes to see that even 10-year-olds can have logical opinions and to accept that I am an intelligent person like most people. I believe activism is important. Activism is change. It is the fuel, lubricant, and engine that drives the slowly moving turtle mobile that is progress. I accept this award on behalf of those who have been struck down, beaten up, and instead of attention and praise, have gotten only intolerance, violence, or even worse, indifference. A message to President Obama. I know there are certain political restraints that make action difficult. However, lack of equality for some is lack of equality for all. And I think it's time for us all to get equal. President Theodore Roosevelt often mentioned the bully pulpit of the presidency. My voice is small, has gone far, and with hope has done much good. I think the bully pulpit of your office could go farther and with help do much more. Thank you again. And to quote, thank you again, and to quote a great modern-day thinker, live long and prosper.
That was now 11-year-old Will Phillips of Arkansas and the Final Frontier accepting GLAAD's Outstanding TV Journalism Segment Award on behalf of CNN for Why Will Won't Pledge Allegiance. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Taryn James, Michelle Pleasant, Zrazy, and Steve Fried contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is only made possible by our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, listen to our podcasts, read the text of this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WSUI, Iowa City, Iowa, CHSR, Fredericton, New Brunswick, KOPN, Columbia, Missouri, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
This is Queer Music Heritage with J.D. Doyle, and this month I'm taking you back musically and politically to the early 90s. The theme of the show is Queer Nation. That was a direct action organization that popularized the chant, "We're here, we're queer, get used to it. We're here, we're queer, get used to it. We're here, we're queer, get used to it." Here's Rick Creswell of the band Queer Conscience talking about their song, It's a Queer Nation.
Well, it's a very simple message. It just says we're here, we're not going away.
Again, this is J.D. Doyle. And in a way, I think that every queer music heritage show I've done in the last 10 years has had a political angle to it, in that getting the music and the message of our lives out there is an important statement. But this month, I'm going to put the politics front and center. The theme of both segments of the show will be Queer Nation. And I've got some, I think, special ways to do this. That includes interviews with the band Queer Conscience in this segment, and in part two with a wonderful new and very political duo calling themselves Good Asian Drivers. And, of course, I squeeze in other goodies as well. You already have an introduction to the band Queer Conscience. Before we hear their interview, I want to give you some background information, and I'm going to do that in a couple ways. Queer Nation was a direct action organization founded in New York City in early 1990 by members of the group called ACT UP, and it quickly spread to a number of cities around the country. And you can't really understand Queer Nation unless you know about ACT UP. I happen to be able to do that musically. This comes from my October 2008 show, where I got Scott Free to talk about his CD, The Pink Album, and his song called ACT UP, FIGHT BACK.
It's about time someone wrote a song called ACT UP, FIGHT BACK.
You know, I really felt like I had to devote a number of songs to AIDS. I couldn't skip over it. I couldn't do it lightly. AIDS has been, for 15 years, it was just this black cloud that existed over our lives, and I didn't want to, belittle it. And I knew, in my opinion, ACT UP saved hundreds of thousands of people's lives, because they were out there just causing riots to get the drug companies to get those drugs out to people faster than was the normal flow system. And I'm just convinced that because of that combination therapy starting in the mid-90s, and that was ACT UP's doing, they just pushed and pushed and pushed, that they saved so many people's lives. And I just thought it was so important to include something about ACT UP. And I really struggled with how am I going to write a song about that. And then I was just web searching, and I found a website that had just documented all of their protests. And so I thought, oh, this is perfect. I just grabbed all their protest slogans and made a song out of it. And as I started to record it, I was like, oh, wow, I'm onto something here, because I just can't ever think of a song that is an actual, instead of a protest, quote-unquote, protest song from the 60s, I mean, it is a literal protest song.
ACT UP, FIGHT BACK! ACT UP, FIGHT BACK!
Powerful song called ACT UP, FIGHT BACK by Scott Free. Okay, that was a bit of the ACT UP story, and I wanted to also give you background on Queer Nation. To do that, I contacted Ray Hill. Now, no one would dispute that Ray Hill is the father of the gay movement in Houston and has, either behind the scenes or way out front, been at the pulse of the city's GLBT progress for about 50 years. And I'm very pleased to say I've known Ray a long time and pleased to bring you this short interview with him.
Can you briefly describe the national organization, Queer Nation?
Well, we had been doing remarkable progress on GLBT movement until the AIDS crisis came in. And then that being a more impressing priority, then ACT UP kind of took the forefront and used a lot of energy at making progress in defending people's lives and protecting them through reforms with ACT UP. And meanwhile, the GLBT stuff was pushed to the back of the stage and wasn't getting a lot of play. And a group of activists, both nationally and locally in Houston, decided, wait a minute, this ain't right. We have this other work to do, and what we do about AIDS is important. Thus emerged a group of people using activism in the fashion of ACT UP on gay, lesbian, transgendered, and bisexual issues. Thus, Queer Nation.
For those who don't know ACT UP, what was their tactic?
Well, ACT UP was very confrontational, and it needed to be because we were dealing with people that were not just subject to arrest and abuse. We're dealing with people who were subject to die. And we had great big burly enemies. All of the church people were saying AIDS was God's curse upon gay people, and that had to be addressed. The first battle that ACT UP fought was to keep AIDS from being named gay-related immune deficiency syndrome, GRIDS. And whenever you get a major disease named after your group, that's hell on earth. So we had to fight that battle. And it was decided that very confrontational, in-your-face kind of strategies is what needed to happen in those pressing priorities. And that's what ACT UP became. And Queer Nation kind of immolated those activist patterns for other issues.
My research indicates Houston was one of the more active cities in the country for Queer Nation. Were you involved in the Queer Nation activities, and could you mention some of them?
The Houston Queer Nation movement not only continued to straighten out the issues that had evolved with ACT UP, but also took a different form, a more egalitarian form. They didn't even have permanent officers. They changed chairs from meeting to meeting. It was a very egalitarian structure that I personally like, because I think that moving the responsibilities around is a better way to approach those things.
Do you recall some of the particular Queer Nation protests in Houston?
Yeah, in Houston, probably one of the most effective uses of Queer Nation was one generated by me, because I wound up with the police stuff. And when Paul Broussard was killed, the police said, we're not going to solve this case. So I went to Queer Nation, asked for their assistance, and they came forward, and massive demonstration, 4,000 people at the corner of Westheimer and Montrose one night. And that made headline news, and we kept the story alive with continued activities of Queer Nation for weeks until the case was solved.
Hey, ho, ho, homophobia, cut, go! Hey, hey, ho, ho, homophobia, cut, go!
Thanks to a YouTube video of news coverage, I was able to slip in there some of the actual chanting from the demonstration Ray just described.
I've read there were some other noted activities, like the firing of people or the Republican convention in Houston.
Well, the Republican convention was the one national Queer Nation activity in Houston. The senior George Bush had maneuvered the Republican convention at our Astrodome, and while they were in town, they decided to put on a show that was planned actually by national Queer Nation leadership. And that resulted
in typical Houston police riot, where the only time in my career that I was part of a group after which I had to go by hospitals and check on people and by jails and check on people. Generally speaking, you try to keep people out of jails and hospitals following demonstrations, but that one, it didn't work.
Looking back now almost 20 years, what do you think is the legacy of Queer Nation?
We made rapid progress in struggling toward GLBT equality at a time when most of the energy had recently, prior to that, been devoted to HIV and AIDS issues. And it kept the charge toward our equality as a people going after we had taken a sabbatical for that. It continued the movement, which continues today in a different form. Houston now has a lesbian mayor. We wouldn't have a lesbian mayor if Queer Nation hadn't filled the gap in their era.
Do you believe that Queer Nation helped reclaim the word queer?
Absolutely. That is, anthropologically, it not only reclaimed the word queer, it tidied it up considerably. Their direct confrontational effort made the word respectable because of the courage of the organization.
You are so good at this. I've got plenty. Could you do a drop? This is Ray Hill, and you're listening to Queer Music Heritage.
This is Ray Hill, and I'm listening to Queer Music Heritage, and I want you to know this is some of the most important work in our culture.
Okay.
Time to get back to the music. Out of the Boston area, the band Queer Conscience released three recordings, starting in 1992 with It's a Queer Nation, and followed by Back to the Other World in 1993 and Geja Vu in 1995. All are very queer. The founding band members were Rick Creswell, his partner Jamie Pierce, and Justine Sullivan. I was delighted to track down Rick and Jamie for this interview, and I started with Rick.
How did the band Queer Conscience come about? And it seems like it had a built-in agenda.
Oh, it definitely had a built-in agenda, with, at least for ourselves to start with, to make ourselves feel good about being gay. And it started, as much as I can remember, Jamie was working for a big computer company, Digital, back in the late 80s. And it was a gay group that had a talent show, and we were part of that. Before that, I wrote a song, Everyone Knows. We did it with acoustic guitars and folky sound. I think that's kind of how it started, and we just enlarged on that and said, you know, there really isn't any music out there that's talking about us. Let's make some.
So it was more the message than the music driving the band?
Yeah, definitely. I made a point of not writing anything that would be mistaken as being straight, just so things would be kind of equaled, fill in some of the areas that we really weren't talked about.
On the first Queer Conscience album, there was a song I can't really play on this segment, as it airs on public radio. Now, you can hear it on the internet version of Part 1, but for broadcast radio, I'll just let you hear Rick talking about it.
A song, Gonna Eat My Way to Heaven, is very sexual. could you talk about it?
Well, at the time we were involved with Queer Nation, so having things in your face was kind of the way to go. And, there's nothing left to the imagination in that song. It kind of departed from that way of looking at things because it seemed to limit the audience. I wanted to concentrate on the gay issues rather than sexual.
Yeah, that was a question, an angle I wanted to follow up with, is that several songs on the first release were so sexual and had language issues. I guess it was a conscious effort not to carry that over on the other albums.
Yeah, it was. It didn't bias anything, and not even shock value, because there wasn't a lot of opportunity to even play the music. And I thought maybe Queer Nation would kind of be excited about it, but Queer Nation was a very kind of fluid group. It was different each time it got together. It would be different people each time it got together in a lot of cases.
So no structure for anybody to grab a hold of anything?
No, no structure at all. But with kind of a game plan that could kind of agree with. We did a lot of things that were thought to be bizarre at the time, but then people in higher places in the Boston community were very appreciative that we did do kiss-ins and things like that.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that kiss-in, the one that I think you're very well known for. Could you talk about that?
At Stocks and Bonds, a mostly heterosexual in a popular bar at the time. I think it was 1990. We had a Queer Nation had a kiss-in or a visibility action. And we went and danced and listened to the music and like everybody else. And at some point we were ready to leave, actually. And two guys in our group kissed each other. The security guard, who was a Boston policeman, rushed right over there and told them they couldn't do it. And it just bugged the hell out of us for him to tell us we couldn't do that. All the straight people were doing it. So Jamie and I instantly started kissing. And of course he came over to us and picked me up by my throat.
Ooh.
And pushed, very big guy. And pushed me backwards and off balance and threw me through a set of doors onto a staircase. The bouncers kind of took their signals from him and they started pushing everybody in our group. There were about a dozen of us out onto the street and into the street until I got close enough to the guy that attacked me to read his badge number. And I yelled that and he backed away.
Was there follow-up to that?
Yeah. I tried. I went to the ACLU. We talked to the internal affairs. And we had a hearing and the whole bit, but it was clearly not going to go our way. And nothing was done about it at all.
Wasn't there some kind of, not a settlement, but some determination later?
That was when the MCAD, the Massachusetts Commission on Discrimination, and it took a few years. This was aimed not towards the police, but towards the bar for hiring the police and setting a policy. And we won that case. We won the couple of us who made out reports and talked to the MCAD, including myself, won $10,000.
Wow.
Well, we never got a penny of it. The bar went out of business, so that was their way of not having to pay us. It was never the money anyway. It was just they got on the radio, it got noticed, and at least the message was out there that, you know, bad things can happen to people who discriminate.
Queerly Beloved has to be one of the earliest songs about gay marriage, and I can only think about one earlier one.
Yeah, I just was looking at that recently. I kind of dug up all those older songs that you were interested in, and it was mostly just making fun of the institution of marriage. At the same time, we were being deprived of it.
I always watched for the signs, so I would know what was right to do. They called me one of that kind, though I would trip on you. Change my lip so I could take my nose. It hurts to dress without you.
And how about the song, A Sunrise That Stays?
Well, that was just very romantic, and it's all the good reasons for getting married. The song that I wrote for a gay wedding, and it was played at our commitment ceremony in 1990.
We start today as any other day, but before it's through, you'll have my ring on you. It won't change the way we feel, but forever we'll seem real, and together we'll be a sunrise that stays. Through night and day, we'll watch it turn our way, and whatever fear will be inside if one tears, but we'll wipe it all with love and hope and pride, and together we'll be a sunrise that stays. Promises of a love unbroken, a common dream, though not always spoken, not only for today.
I read that when you and Jamie sent out a commitment announcement, it caused quite a stir.
Yeah, well, in a lot of ways, we just thought, well, we'll send it out to the local paper. We'll put it together like a regular wedding announcement and see what they do. Because we had reason to believe that it may be the case that no one's ever even tried to do it, just think giving up before they tried. So we did that. The paper refused to print it.
This was the Patriot Ledger?
That's right.
What city was that?
Quincy. We held a protest at the newspaper building. And there were about a dozen cops that showed up. And there were about 8 or 10 of us. And it was pretty kind of exciting. I rented a bullhorn. We did a mock gay wedding there and threw pink carnations and rice at the police. But at the time, it was near closing time for the paper. Everybody was noses pressed up against the windows watching it. And we expected when they got out that it would be a lot of negative reaction. And we're stunned at how positive it was.
Did the paper ever change its policy?
Yes, it did. Hi, this is Rick Cresswell
and Jamie Pierce
of Queer Conscience. And you're listening to Queer Music Heritage.
And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. As I mentioned earlier, two of the founding members of Queer Conscience were Rick Cresswell and his partner Jamie Pierce, so I could not pass up the opportunity to also talk to Jamie.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
This is a real treat, you know, to get both of you as part of an interview to do a tribute to the band.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for your interest. Great.
I want to ask you a couple things. Since your song is A Stranger's Face, you wrote it and sing it, could you talk about that song?
Yeah, I guess it was just the idea of a couple that's been together and, you know, what happens internally to the relationship when one of the two decides not to be closeted and becomes more politically aware and begins to change in that way. And if the other partner isn't moving in that same direction at the same time, you know, what kinds of new tensions and you know, what happens inside a relationship when something like that happens.
I can't think of another song like that.
Well, thanks.
Knowing I live a lie, I began to feel all in all, I could afford to try to make it real. I began to show my face, reveal my life and claim a place. In a flash, I destroyed what they knew. Well, we never knew.
Ask Rick about the song Everyone Knows.
That's a song that talks about being visibly gay. Everybody seems to know it, but the person who is gay. And just having unrealistic expectations are just the wrong idea of how you come across to people.
Dining with your man, so please. Strolling with your girlfriend, everyone knows. If you accept the shame, then you're as much to blame. Keep homophobic eyes from stopping you. Don't you think that your employer thinks it's strange that whenever there's a party, your other plans get changed? Fellow workers rave about their lives, but you become the kind of person who keeps it all.
Another very strong song uses rap. Could you talk about Save Our Children?
Yeah, again, a very simple concept. Your kid might be gay, but still your kid. Just try to put it into what was the popular music at the time.
You're back at school, but if you're really cool, you won't be a slave to the hetero rule. Learn to listen and try to see that life is richer with diversity.
I can think for myself, I'm no fool, and I won't be controlled like some church's tool. I'm no robot or some copycat, and I don't need you to tell me where it's at.
Save our children.
Comes to fashion, it comes to style. You top dress and comb your hair alike for a while. We all dance the dance with our hands in our pants, but seldom do we ever give the truth a chance.
When it comes to this, I choose the one I kiss, and who I pick is my own business. I know who I am, I've got my own way, and I know 10% of this school is gay.
Save our children. Save our children.
the gas. For education, we pay a price, but teachers keep missing an important slice. We're all different, no one's the same, and teaching this would be a better aim. In a better world, we'd all have a place, with no more conformity in our face. Black, white, red, yellow, gay, and straight, we can learn to live and not live to hate. Being gay is just another way, not so different from the game you play. What we're used to and what's so clear is you're the one who decides what's queer. Now we're back at school, and you can bet we're cool. We won't be slaves to the hetero rule.
Save our children.
Please tell me about the song Outside Information.
Well, again, this is another song which talks about insisting on being visible. So you tell your parents you're gay, and they say, well, we're going to keep it a secret, or then that's against the rules. It's not inside information, it's outside information. It's information that we want to be spread. Because it's something we're proud of or not ashamed of or different than what our parents or other generations might expect.
I had that same reaction from my parents. You know, we love you, we accept you, but let's not tell our relatives about this.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even know that my parents were not telling people. In fact, at our commitment ceremony, we wrote the ceremony ourselves, and we put as part of it to really support us, you need to tell people at work and tell your other family members that you went to a gay wedding this weekend, and that's your way of supporting us, is to keep our visibility alive.
From there.
I have to ask about the song Harvey.
Oh, about Harvey Milk. Well, it's a story that a lot of us know about, being one of the first out people in politics and in San Francisco. And this is just kind of a tribute to him, and I was really happy to hear. This was a bunch, maybe 10 years ago, that someone had been visiting San Francisco. It went into the public library, and they were having some kind of remembrance of Harvey Milk. And right on display was the lyrics to my song, which I thought was very cool.
Fighting the battles to free us and give us a voice. His challenge to discrimination was to offer us a choice. Determined to stretch social limits and to teach them all to see. A young boy's voice in a phone call said, "Thanks for helping me." Our
Their third recording was called Geisha View, and from it, I asked Rick about the song A Wonder.
This is a story, it's a made-up story, but it's something that really does happen in real life, about a father. In this story, he's a single parent with a daughter who is very proud of her father, knows he's gay, and kind of shames him into feeling better about himself and deciding, if my little girl is proud of me, I should be proud of me too. A lot of people really reacted to that song. They had somebody in their lives who'd kind of fit the roles.
Yeah, I like some of the lines where the father said, oh, if you wear that pink triangle, it'll cause trouble.
Right. And she didn't care. She's going to wear it anyway. And it kind of emboldened him.
Title of the third release is Geisha View.
Yeah,
and that's an interesting turn on that phrase.
Well, it's about what deja vu is about. It doesn't seem like we've waged this battle before. And the truth is that it just keeps on needing to be brought up. No matter how long we're out, no matter how visible we are, there are still people that are waiting to take our rights away.
I understand there's quite a story behind the song Marching in Southie.
Yeah, that's Justine's song. She wrote it. I arranged it. And I don't know how much the rest of the country hears about what happens in Boston, but a few years back, gay groups were banned from the St. Patrick's Day Parade in South Boston. We got a court order to overturn that. It's now gone back to us not being included in it, but it just talks about the irony of gay people being kicked out of celebrating being Irish. Gay people are just as Irish, and in fact, in Ireland, they don't make any big deal out of gay people marching in the parades. The year that they did march, Justine was marching, Jenny was marching. I didn't know I was so Irish at the time, or I would have been marching. I was following the group on the sidewalks, and I got coffee thrown at me. Jamie got beer thrown at him. It was not very welcoming.
Record checks and green balloons, the pipers play a march and tune. Watching the St. Patrick's Day parade. There were firemen and cops galore, and veterans of foreign wars, all proud to claim their Irish heritage. And on that day, and they marched in 92. The city said they couldn't ban the queers, though they wanted to. And so they let them in, but they made them run the gauntlet. But they weren't afraid to show their kids how hateful they could be. Don't they realize that one in ten of them could be just like me?
I want to add two things. The full title of that song was Marching in Salvi, Our St. Patrick's Day Parade. And Salvi is the heavily Irish section of Boston. As Rick said, the song was written by band member Justine Sullivan, and from another source, I've got a quote from Justine about the song.
In 1993, Jamie Pierce and I joined GLIB and marched in the parade. We marched through Southie, and there were people lining the streets with their faces all scrunched up in hatred, and they yelled at us. And I guess it was better than the reception the previous year, where there was actual violence and people threw things. But it was still really scary to see these people that just hated us so much.
Since KPFT is a Pacifica station, I was able to get from the Pacifica archives a segment from This Way Out from March of 1996 about that song and their third album called Geja View. You can hear the entire segment on my site.
Is there one song from all three albums that has gotten the most attention?
I think Your Coming Out Day has gotten a lot of the attention. Your Coming Out Day is a celebratory song. It's perfect for the actual coming out day, national coming out day, but any day. And it basically says, your coming out day, you should be proud of yourself. It's against all odds. It's not so easy to do. And you've come out, and if you can do that, you can do almost anything.
Stop it.
Going back to Jamie for a couple more questions.
When you look back at the band, do you have a favorite memory?
I just enjoyed, you know, the whole process actually of doing the very first record was so different than, you know, the way the later ones were made, because Rick did it all on his own with a little bit of work in the studio just to finalize the songs and master them, and but all of it was done at home on this little four track recorder, and every part that was recorded was done that way. And things have changed so much. Everything, the technology and also the business of selling music has changes so rapidly. When the first cassette came out, you know, Rick would be driving around New England, you know, talking to individual managers of record shops about stocking his music, and very, very hands-on kind of process. And of course, that was before the internet and before everybody started downloading music off the net and before iTunes. And
yeah, it's all different now.
It's all different, yeah.
Any guess on how many copies of that cassette were pressed?
Probably hundreds. Yeah, in the low hundreds, maybe 300 or 400 probably.
Okay. It's very rare.
Well, yeah, well, partly it's because we don't have an outlet to sell it. It's very difficult without advertising. And we were never a performing band. You know, we didn't tour to support the records. We just put the records out there. And if you're not advertising it in some fashion, or if you're not performing live to back up the sales of the CD, it's very, very difficult to get them sold, because people, you know, they look at it in a record shop in those days and they have no idea what it was or what it sounded like.
Well, as the band has not been active for about 15 years, there's not a website for them, but the last two releases can be found on iTunes. I'm down to the last song for part one. But before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening. And I want to especially thank Rick Creswell and Jamie Pierce of Queer Conscience and Ray Hill in Houston for the wonderful interviews. And I've already told you, the journey continues in part two with an interview with the very talented and outspoken duo Good Asian Drivers. That, of course, can be found at www.queermusicheritage.com. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. And back to Rick for the last song.
What do you think your place is in gay music history?
My place? Well, I'd like to think it's as a motivator, to motivate people to at least get to the level that we were as far as being out. You know, it's great to see gay musicians out there and gay songwriters and stuff. So I would hope that I would have some responsibility in driving that a little further to the edge.
Considering the radio shows that I do, there's probably never been a song more logical for me to ask about than your song, Gay Music.
Yeah, gay music is
one of my focuses, and has been over the years, because it talks about the issue of gay people supporting gay music. It identifies what gay music is, what it is to me, at least. And it brings up examples of, I saw Daddy Kissing Santa Claus, kind of where we've gotten to before this, how far we've come. And I'm not sure we've come that far when it comes to music. So that's why I kind of spelled it out. I thought, well, this is what I'm thinking about.
Been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning, starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Join the Houston Peace and Justice Center and the Service Employees International Union on Tuesday, March 23rd, for the screening of the film Bread and Roses at Cafe Brazil at 7 p.m. Bread and Roses deals with the struggle of poorly paid janitorial workers in Los Angeles and their fight for better working conditions, as well as the right to unionize. It is based on the Justice for Janitors campaign of the Service Employees International Union. The film derives its name from the 1912 textile strike in Lawrence, Massachusetts, which united dozens of immigrant communities, a strike largely led by women. Cafe Brazil is located on the corner of Westheimer and Dunleavy Street between Montrose and Shepherd. For more information, visit hpjc.org. This is KPFT Houston. The Alliance for Multicultural Community Services will be hosting their annual Stars Among Us Gala, April 3rd, honoring immigrants who have made significant contributions to improve the quality of life of people around them. This year, the Alliance will honor Dr. Nidil Najam, a Pakistani immigrant and Nobel Prize laureate, for his work on climate change, and Mr. Ahmad Al-Yassin of Jordan, a leader in Houston's Arab American community. Proceeds from the Stars Among Us event fund scholarships for refugee youth resettled by the agency. Individual tickets are $100, or a group can sponsor a table. For more information and to buy tickets, go to www.allianceontheweb.org and click Stars Among Us. This is KPFT Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.